Okay, thank you. Good noon. I'm sorry, I'm the last obstacle between you and lunch. So somebody has to pull this one off, and unfortunately it had to be me. How do you like the Cloudburst conference so far? Guys having fun? Can I hear a big yay? At least now the live stream audience knows that there is an audience in the house. That's a good thing. A little bit about me. First, I'm Mike Martin. I'm one of the unfortunate guys from Belgium. Sorry about that. You just have to live with it throughout my presentation. There's a ton of things that I am and that I'm not. Most important thing is I'm the crew member of ASUG, which is a Belgian counterpart for the SWAG. It's SWAG, right?
SWAG.
SWAG. Okay, SWAG, sorry. I'm an Azure MVP since April. You can follow my blog, you can mail me, you can follow my Twitter handle. For those who are interested in big data, that's a real big data stream. So for some people here in the...
Fire.
Fire. Yeah, okay. So if you're interested in those things, just copy it and, you know, follow those things online. First, I have a small question. Oh, that's actually a little bit too fast. First, I have a small question. Who's IT pro in the room? One, two, not that many. And how do you think about developers? No. How do you think about developers? I'm I see a thumbs down to developers. And why is that? Because most of the time when they start developing things, most of the time they come like, hey guys, can you put up a server for me? Like tomorrow? And you go like, what? It's really the thing that happens in IT is that IT pros are the last in line to get involved in a project. Yeah. Cloud enablement helps us to be more agile towards developers. Okay, to be honest, I'm nor an IT pro nor a dev. I'm hybrid. So I'm the pure hybrid solution. Yeah. So IT pros really get crossed to devs because they can't deliver in time. Devs get crossed with IT pros because they need their server stat and they can't deliver in time. So it's always this DevOps thing. It keeps on going and going and going. And you know, for an IT pro, it isn't always easy. If for dev, it's always easy to get along, right? This is a little bit what I'm going to talk about. How can you be more agile towards your developers as an IT pro, and how to react to them, how to help them, and to grandly still manage cloud, okay? Oh, I need to do something first, because elsewhere this is going to be annoying, because I forgot to turn off my notifications. That could be real fun. So what I'm going to talk to you about today is how the IT pro, what he's doing today and what he will be doing tomorrow. Because most of the IT pros, well, they kind of fear for their jobs. Are they right? Are they wrong? Magnus proved already a little bit in the opposite direction. I'm going to show you the same thing. So a little introduction, what Windows Azure for the IT pro can mean. You're going to see a couple of things that were already mentioned by the previous speakers, but I'm also going to try to do some other stuff. Stuff that people don't think about, or stuff that you might be using tomorrow in your environment. Yeah. Talk a little bit about hybrid. I'm going to look a little bit on why and Windows IT Pro should be working also with cloud services, because that's not always clear what a cloud service is. And a little bit about identity. And then you're off to lunch. You can go and eat and come back with a fulfilled feeling after lunch to, I don't know who's next after the new, to my pal over there who's going to talk about MyGit, which is a great service supported. Free plug. Okay. So, for the IT pros, what does an IT pro do the entire day? Besides lurking coffee. And besides doing nothing, that's for civil servants. Sorry. what does an IT pro do? Hands, please. I know you guys aren't really interactive in Sweden. Trust me, Belgian audience is the same, so just shout. I will repeat. Nobody? Okay, I'm just going
to...
Sorry?
Revoke privileges.
From developers. Yeah. Exactly. Okay, here we go. You're probably a diff. Okay. Now, most of the time, IT pros install hardware. They're box movers. Yeah, they come in, they have a box. Oh, nice new rack, shiny, let's polish it. What else do? They configure the network. And there it starts already with, blocking some ports. We can't do RDP anymore over standard ports. I need my secure shell, can't have it. So they're configuring the firewall in the network. Install the OS. Because all you guys want servers with crispy new OSs. And unfortunately, it's update, 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 stop, fail, return, return, update again. Yeah, that's basically the thing of an IT pro. Daily operations, right? Manage storage and backup. Now, storage and backup, that's a good one. Because how many developers take backups of their servers? We got a development server. Oh, and our database server crashed. Do you have a backup of that? No, because you wanted access to that. Hence, they do it the other way around. Okay. Apply security. There we go again. Permissions. Manage certificates. And sometimes that tends to go wrong. Deploy applications, whether it's on servers or on PCs. So PC management is also in there. And monitor applications and OS health. Yeah. Now, and the latter one, and that's the most important one, because they have to talk to business and developers, is that they need to scale on demands by business needs. And that's the hardest part. As Magnus already mentioned earlier, there is this nice flow going. So you have a forecast on your load. You go and buy some machines. You put them here, there in your data center. Then you allocate the capacity. And then you go live. And you get this kind of a stream. Yeah. And, you know, on the bottom, too much power, overkill. Most of the time your servers are running idle, so you don't have to do anything there. There it is, not enough power. And that's the period you don't want to go into. And that's a potential business loss, costs you money, and you don't want to go there, right? And it's hard for an IT pro to cope with that. And this is wasted capacity, so you're paying not only for servers, but also licenses. Also, maintenance of a certain hardware stack. So it's all these things that you need to keep in mind. Now here, this is a great example of a real life scenario. We all know ticket sales. In Belgium, we have a big problem with that tele ticket service. They tend to go and sell tickets, and they announce, like for instance, a big artist. I'm not going to say things like Justin Bieber because that's killing the scenery, but they announce big concerts. And what happens is that they open the ticket sales and all goes well, and then they get peaks. Oh, oops. Then they get peaks, but you only calculate it underneath the peak. And this is where the CLMs drop in. Anybody knows what a CLM is? This is the career limiting moment. This is where you, as an IT pro, architect, or data center manager, you get sacked because you can't cope with the scaling. Yeah. And then this, actually, you get this. It ricochets back in your face because... it ricochets back in your face because what happens is you calculate for something, but you didn't keep in mind that it would actually happen. I don't know what she's shooting, but it has to hurt anyway. You can only hope that it's cantaloupe and not weird watermelon, but anyway, it hurts like hell. And that's the same thing that happens to you when you miscalculate your data usage and your CPU usage in your data center. You lose business, and this hurts like hell for you, for your business, for the guy who developed the software, and you start blaming each other. Well, it's your fault because you didn't architect it well. No, it's your fault because you didn't calculate, and business goes on. Oh, it's your too fault because you don't communicate. Enter public cloud. Yeah. Now, public cloud is, for me, I don't know about you guys, but the definition of public clouds, is that clear to anyone, to everyone? Do you know the definitions between, the differences between public and private cloud? Or even the other clouds? We had a great discussion earlier on the, was it the insiders list, Magnus? Yeah. I think so, the MVP list. Discussing what's really the difference. Sorry about that. Can you cut that out in the editing? But really the definition is of cloud. For me, in my humble opinion, then again, I'm just the stupidest person in this room, so I dare to say that about myself because it's just me. For me, the difference between public and private cloud is just a matter of economics. It has nothing to do with with the way you handle your data center or your cloud infrastructure. You can perfectly happy have a private cloud in a public cloud environment and vice versa, depending on what you want to do with it. Yeah. And then you still have hybrid cloud, which is a combination of both, and community cloud, which I never understood why they call it community cloud, unless you want to do something like City at Home or something. That's a real community cloud because everybody adds to computing power. Yeah. So in this definition, it's more like public available cloud computing power. Nothing more, nothing less. Public cloud has an advantage that you have on demand, whenever you need it. You only pay for what you use. It's internet-based. It's always accessible, or at least what the provider promises you. So they're bound by a certain amount of SLAs, which are most of the time really good. I mean, nobody can guarantee you really 3 or 5 nines because you always have an extra layer somewhere where you're responsible for that. Yeah. That's something you need to keep in mind, by the way, SLAs within Windows Azure. It's something you need to look through very deep because every level within Windows Azure has a different percentage of SLA. Yeah? And you're only being reinvoiced for when damage of that service is there for the cost of what you should have paid for that service. Everything that you do, for instance, in a VM, you're responsible for. But they're responsible for keeping that VM up and running. I mean, the accessibility. Okay. I'm going to make some noise. Sorry about that. Cool. So read the SLAs very carefully. Another thing with things like Windows Azure, it's a continuously evolving platform. Yes, I did say platform. Not in the broad sense of PaaS, but really as a platform for getting hosting, getting VMs, getting virtual networking, a real big platform. Expect things to change. We Mark already discussed a couple of things that are on the roadmap, things that will change tomorrow. There's an openness now that we're moving more towards WAAD, so Windows Azure Active Directory, stuff like that, instead of ACS and stuff like that. Yeah. So keep your mind open that the platform changes, so that means you need to be more agile towards the things that you make in the platform. So it's delivered as a service, there's some advantages, there's some disadvantages. What's in it for the IT Pro? So if we look at the components that Windows Azure has, we already discussed it. I'm just going to go quickly over it. But the thing is that I'm pointing out another couple of things that haven't been mentioned yet. Yeah, we have, for the developers, we have, yeah, basically, what do we have? Visual Studio, Eclipse. No matter what language you use, you can use it on Windows Azure. Most languages are supported. For a developer, that's openness. But what about the IT Pro? We need some tooling. We need some management things, management capabilities. Well, you get your on-premise management. You get PowerShell. You get remote desktoping that you can do in your server. So you get System Center for those who are more fortunate in buying licenses, because the System Center environment is a very extensive universe. Again, you have different licenses in there, you have different products in there, which can help you manage your public-private cloud environment, whether it's on-prem or off-prem. I will put this, by the way, I will put these slides, I don't know whether the slides will be available on the website.
Channel 9,
okay. So I still need to send them to you guys. Okay, cool. So if you want my slides, you can find them on Channel 9 after the recordings or with the recordings, which is being streamed right now also. So there's a lot of tooling available. If you want to go deep dive management, you can still go through the portal or to the API if you're a dev and you still don't find your cheese. You can go deep level in the API. If you haven't any experience in development, stay away with it and go with the easiest thing, like PowerShell. Yeah. Because the APIs, they are well documented, but they can be very nasty to develop too. Well, the layers on top for management is the compute, the storage, and the databases. Mark gave you an overview this morning, so I think you have probably a good idea what's in there, right? Sorry. Next to that, why is my thing not showing? Where's my ticks not showing? Okay. Next of that, we have services running on top of that. Ah, there they are. So the services that are running in compute is cloud services, virtual machines, websites. And those, especially cloud services and virtual machines, those are the ones that the IT pro really can manage. There's a lot of other stuff that you can manage, but those are the ones that you're going to use most, because for virtual machines, it's easy. You do the patching, you do the deployment. And for the cloud services, it's really the application rollout and deployment. Yeah. Next to that, other services running on that is access control, network connectivity. And you all know that since the GA of this summer, we have site-to-site and point-to-site VPNs. Who's been using it, by the way? And which type? Point-to-site or site-to-site? Point-to-site. Who's tried the site-to-site? And what did you think about the site-to-site experience?
Quite great, actually. Works pretty well.
Pretty well. And how did you manage it off? Did you use the PowerShell commandlets? Did you use the management portal?
Through management portal.
And did you... can I ask what technology you're using for site-to-site?
Cisco.
Okay. It's pretty well... well supported and well certified. So for now, it's only Cisco's and Juniper's, but they're still in the move to add more devices. Even Windows Server VPNing is supported. Yeah, so you can also use that through RS. Yeah, so that's also supported. There's actually a good blog post by a friend of ours named FabricController.net. He has a completely blog post on how to connect Windows Server 2012 with site-to-site connection. I will put it in my slides at the end, so that way you get some reference reading for that. Now, I've been talking about IT Pro stuff and what you can do as an IT Pro, but there's still that thing that I mentioned in the beginning of my session, developers. If you're working with developers, you want to give them... because you have this wonderful platform called Windows Azure, you want to give them some freedom, but you need to set some boundaries. Yeah. Hence why this little slide. If you're having developers, you want to give them the complete freedom because they need to test stuff. Since the GA of this summer, we are allowed to run MSDN licenses on Windows Azure, yeah, which is a good thing. Most development teams have an MSDN license. So that means you can roll out whatever you want to without paying an extra license. You are paying for it because you're using the credits that they are allowed to. So you can test those. But you don't want that on your production environment. Yeah. So that's what I mean by setting boundaries. If you're having dev teams, make sure that they have their own MSDN activation on Windows Azure, and have separate subscriptions within your organization. I mean, if you're a BizSpark user, for instance, you can have up to 8 MSDN subscriptions for free. You only need credit card activation, and even now, you don't need it anymore. You used to have. So that gives you a level of freedom to play with. So that way you can have an environment for test, you can have an environment for production, you can have an environment for development, for instance. That way your developers can have a little bit more freedom. You can perhaps have a little bit more of overview of what they're doing. Yeah. And you should see Windows Azure as an extension of your IT environment, because you want to see what's going on. You still want to do the good things that you're doing today, but move them to the cloud and extend your universe. Because now we're breaking out of the box, literally. We're not boxed anymore. We're going cloud, we're going the sky. The sky is the limit. Yeah. So, and it's a dirty word. I mean, the anomaly, developers aren't an anomaly. We need to work together to make tomorrow's software work better and more agile and more performant and more productive. Yeah. So you're there for them and they're there for you because you're an ecosystem. You live in symbiosis. You know, one can't live without the other. Because what's the use of having a server if you're not running any software on it? Whether it's custom made or whether it's run by Microsoft or another vendor, right? So that way, use some granularity in your subscriptions and keep the production environment separated from your developers. Why? Because elsewhere, if they give you root access, this will happen. This really will happen. They overrun you. Yeah? And you don't want that. You want control, right? We're the pesky little creatures that limit your capabilities. So if you get total freedom, you can do whatever you want. As a developer, this is heaven, because that's what you always want. You want full control about the environment. Well, separate subscriptions is a way to go. Yeah, this is the old portal. You should start by creating some subscriptions. The new portal. Luckily, who noticed that the old portal is now totally dead? And who's happy with that? Everybody happy? Yeah. Or do you miss the Silverlight portal? No. What, nobody lost Silverlight? Who dares to say I lost Silverlight? Nobody. Sorry, Silverlight MVPs. Now, it's a good thing. They finally put everything now in the new portal, and that was a point that I was going to make. Again, that's the point where the guys of the Windows Azure team, and really, you should give them a hands up because they're really doing a great effort in putting a great service together for us all, where it's either for the SDK, for the tooling in Visual Studio, they really are doing great effort. So, guys, thank you for delivering a great product to us. We really love you. And I'm not getting paid for that, by the way, just to make sure. Of course, getting your subscription is easy. Yeah? We all want to win this one, right? It's just some shameless plug for Microsoft, but you all want to win this one, right? So if you haven't yet activated your MSDN subscription, do it now. You don't need a credit card, just activate. And you use the power of the cloud. Yeah, you have it, why wouldn't you use it? Microsoft is actually paying for your credits per month, so that way you can test the software that you're building today on tomorrow's platform. Cool. Next to that, you get your normal subscriptions, which I just showed you, but you also get the enterprise portal. And why am I mentioning this? Well, there was this question earlier on the CDN. Who was that again? Who asked the question on how to... Was you, right? The guy in the gray sweater, I think, yeah. So if you want to have more control on what services are being run by some users, try to go for an enterprise agreement. That way you can manage subscriptions on a company or a tenant level, and that way you can add users to them and you can actually see what they're using. You just bill for them what they are using. So that way you get a more granular control about the CDN settings because you can have it per subscription. Yeah, you can have users in there, you can have You had separate departments in there. Some enterprises tend to do this on an enterprise level just for internal usage, and they just invoice directly to the units inside the company. So that way you get, as an IT pro, again, this comes to you. This is the point I'm getting to. As an IT pro, you get a good management of the users that have access to the Windows Azure environment. Now, there's a couple of things more that you need to keep in mind when managing users or developers or even other IT pros to give them access. Yeah. One is a subscription level, usernamed accounts. That's another level. You can have also the like single point of access. You have a PC where you install the management certificates, and that way you can start managing your. Sorry, I got the sniffs. Yeah, I know, that's annoying. It wasn't an elephant, it wasn't Hadoop in the room, it was just me sneezing and blowing my nose. You can have management certificates. Who uses management certificates to manage your Windows Azure environment? Good. Who uses anything else? Everybody uses the portal, I guess. Yeah? Well, it's a quiet audience. Only Magnus, is Sweden always this quiet? Yeah, that's true. Okay, point made. There's always an exception, proving the point, right? So management certificates is a good way of managing your Windows environment. Thing is that it's limited to a number of users and management certificates, so it gets a little bit harder in the progress of time if you add more users to it, okay? Keep that in mind. Okay. Another way of managing your Azure subscriptions is to through System Center. You can actually do that when using System Center and subscription management within your System Center environment. Yeah. Again, if you have an on-prem and off-prem environment and you want to manage it, System Center is the way to do it. I can't demo you that because I don't have access to our System Center. But if you really want, as an IT pro, a full overview of your public and private cloud or your cloud OS in general, because that's the new term that Microsoft is using for Windows Server families, System Center is really the way to go. Yeah. What it does, it uses the service API and manage the build size in one general console, so that way you can easily move from one place to another, switch easily between production, staging, development, things like that. So it makes your life a little bit easier. Now, if you don't have all this, there's still some other things that you can do. I discussed it already this morning with the gentleman in the shirt over there. I have this. There's other things that you can do. If you have like a Windows Azure MSDN subscription, you can easily deploy now Windows Server 2012, and they have this new feature in there. Who uses PowerShell? And who would like to have a PowerShell in a browser? You have it already or not?
No.
You know you have it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah? I'm going to show you a little thing. Where is my... are you seeing this? Okay. Oops. Let's see. Where did I put it? Here it is. Easy. Oh, okay. duals. Wait. Why isn't... Oh, yeah. Right. Give me a second. Now you should see it, right? Hello? Why isn't the screen coming up back up? Ah, there it is. Okay. Cool. In Windows Server 2012, you have something called the PowerShell Web Access. Well, if you want more granularity for your user management, you want Active Directory in between it, and you want them to have just PowerShell using it, because developers, they know how to use a shell, right? Right? Okay. You can easily do it by this. So I'm going to show you how this works. And then you can say if this is a great idea or not. Just gonna give me my username and my password and the environment that I want to manage. Now, do note, this is a standalone machine, just for proof of concept, but you can easily integrate it as in Active Directory. You can have Active Directory users, you can minimize their access levels and stuff like that just through Active Directory. So that's a great thing, right? So if I just do a sign-in now, you also see that it runs on HTTPS and I just have a self-signed certificate. So I'm a cheapskate. I don't have any money to buy some, for demos, I don't have any money to buy some certificates. So who likes this? This is pretty awesome, right? This is pure, I don't know if you can read it in the back, but this is pure PowerShell. If I do something like this, I get all my services. Now this is pretty cool. Now, wait, I get all my services. Services of what? That's the tricky part. You get all the services running on the server where you execute the PowerShell. This is the server where I logged on to. That's a 2KX thing, so that's the server over there. I only have one server, as I mentioned. So you can do whatever you want. But add the Azure command, let's do it. Add the Node SDK to it. Add the Azure Client Tools, Xplat, and you can have something like this. Oh, wait, you can't see it properly. Ta-da! It actually runs. So if I now do this, it's a little bit slow. Voila, it's getting my virtual machines. Voila, there they are. So actually, there's on my subscription, there's two. Who thinks this is cool? Who thinks this is a cool feature? Okay. Cooler thing is that it runs on a Surface RT. You can also do a remote session on PowerShell because RT has PowerShell. But it also runs on those other things, those iThingies, or those AndonDoe devices. Yeah, sorry, I'm a Microsoft fan. Everything else is evil. Sheer evil. So actually, you can manage your users the way they access Windows Azure without going through the Windows Azure portal. Have them give some granularity and do some other things. Now, combine this with Git. Put your provisioning scripts in Git. Get the latest version and you can work anywhere. The only thing you need is browser-enabled device, and you're good. You're clear to go. You're set to go. Management on the road, either for devs or IT pros. So that's a good thing. That's something you can use. The only thing you need is a small VM. Set it up, put it in the cloud, same subscription, and you can go. So if I just do something like this now, just have a small script here. I'm gonna open this. What I did here is I'm gonna edit it just in Notepad. I'm gonna delete this. I'm gonna save this. Voila. I'm just gonna put this in GitHub. Well, I'm a lazy GitHub user. I got GitHub for Windows, which is actually a pretty nice tool. I'm just gonna open up my Explorer, put the file in there. Voila. Gonna commit my changes. Which IT pro doesn't know how to use GitHub? This is an excellent tool for that. You don't need to know the shell, because Git can be really complicated if you don't know all the commands, even for IT pros, because we love shells, right? Yeah. Then call us PowerShell for nothing, right? So I'm just gonna show my uncommitted changes, gonna commit it. Made it. Voila. Gonna sync it. And if I now take another look at my portal. I go to my Git directory. Still works. I can even do tabbing. Do a directory of that. You see, the thing isn't there. I added an untitled. So what I'm going to do now is git pull. There is some git thing, but it did get my file. Yeah. If I now do this, and I run it, oh, and there's an issue. Ah, yeah, password doesn't meet complexity requirements. So you can start editing it and, you know, that's weird. Why doesn't it meet complexity requirements? Because I thought I had everything. Well, anyway, what I can try is I put in a new one. Edit it again. I'm just going to add a new one. But is it still open? No, it isn't. Just give it some silly names. I'm gonna change the password to Cloud Burst 2013. I think that will be more than sufficient. I think it wasn't long enough because I'm running it on a server and well, close it, put it in here, commit it again. Oh, by the way, never do that in production. Just put in something. Always, when you're doing commits on either what system, if you're an ALM lover, never do something like RR or something. If you have to type in a comment or something, please do so, because it makes tracing a lot easier. And to be honest, your Scrum Master or whoever runs the show will love you even more because he doesn't have to slap you. So I'm just going to sing that again. Now we're going to go back to the... I'm going to do a pull again. Give me another error. Now it's... Why? Didn't I copy it in there? Ah, still syncing. Okay, was a little bit too fast. Now we are. Yeah, that's the disadvantage, of course. You're always dependent on the other service. Yeah. It's also a disadvantage of cloud because the only weak link is your internet provisioning. Okay, so if I now do this, and I run this one, what? Okay. You just have to take my word for it. But actually, it gives you back PowerShell command. Yeah, okay. Mark, you're not the only one breaking demos. So that way, you just have your provisioning of your service, your scripts available. So if you need to, like you're on the road, we need a stat, a machine, or a developer needs a machine, you just does it from here. You don't need a separate machine standing somewhere. You can have your management of your deployment mechanisms through PowerShell on this machine. I believe that this will open a lot of opportunities for micromanagement of your environment. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Who's liking this so far? All right. Happy audience. Who's hungry? Tough. Wrong question. All right, let's talk a little bit about cloud services. Why is this important? Because when we're, as an IT pro, want to balance, we always need to have machine, 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 and we put in front something which is called an ugly thing, which is called a load balancer, right? And that always tends to go wrong because either there's something wrong with the pass-through of the security, or there's something wrong with only being one machine at the other end of the site, for instance, right, Martin? You know, those things, right? And load balancers are a pain, or a PETA, right? I don't have to go into the abbreviation on that one. Cloud services actually make it more easy for you because the load balancer is just a layer of transparency for you, and you can now, as a IT Pro give to your devs a mechanism to test the load balancing before it goes into production. Yeah. The only thing that you need to take in mind is when, as a developer, you're developing a cloud service, you can easily take up something that's existing and put it into a cloud service, but you need to make sure that it's stateless. You need to make sure that the synchronicity is okay. Your architecture needs to be a little bit more refined. Yeah. As an IT pro, you can look into these things, but you don't need to manage that thing anymore. The load balancer goes all by itself. Yeah. So what it does is you can add instances scaling, like Magnus and... where is Mark anyway? I don't see him anymore. Mark, raise your hand. Okay, so he's calling. Okay, sorry. So they showed you already, and it's auto-scaling is a pretty cool feature in Windows Azure. Yeah. You don't need to move in boxes or need to move in virtual machines. Of course, depending on your needs, sometimes you do need still virtual machines or you do need something else than a cloud service. When I look at Windows Azure, there's steps of growing. If you want to start light, start with websites. If, of course, it's a website. If it's not a website, you don't have to look into that, but logical. Yeah. If you want to grow a little bit more and want some more feeling on what's installed on your machine, use a cloud service. Yeah. As my colleagues already mentioned, it's actually, websites is actually also a cloud service. It's PaaS, but designated roles. So they have a specific configuration. If you're using a cloud service, you can install anything on there, but do keep in mind every single deployment, everything you install will be erased and need to be installed again. You can do that, of course, by adding lines to your config at startup, and that way you can give some bat files where you download some software from storage, easily connected, and just install the software. And I have customers who run, for instance, reporting services, Crystal Reports reporting services on there just to visualize reports, but that needs to be installed, so you can do that over there. So scaling up and down is an easy thing, right? Database access, so it's a level of transparency, so that's a good thing. Yeah, for an IT pro, the only thing that you need to keep in mind is cost cutting. It's pay per hour, so if we monitor it correctly, we want to have an idea what the cost is going to be. Again, tooling like the portal or system center can help you with that. But it's something that you can't provision on the fly, right? I mean, unless you're running Azure Pack. Who heard about Azure Pack already? Yeah. Who is totally in the blank about Azure Pack? Okay. Imagine the beautiful Windows Azure on your own premises. Completely configurable per tenant, per user. So that's actually something you can do. You can have an on-prem version of Azure integrated with all the other beautiful things, just as you can have a service bus running on your on-premise. But it's less scalable because you still have the power of the cloud is here with a little bit more in the advantage. Okay. So as I stated before, workroom and web roles, so that's cloud services. On demand, pay per roll, they have a very good SLA for that. Do note, if you're deploying as an IT pro, if you're deploying web roles or work roles, at least two. You need two roles, you need two instances per role, yeah? Or the SLA doesn't count. So if there's one takeaway today on cloud services, two instances of every role, okay? And the cool thing is the devs don't need a real environment yet if they want to run their software because they can easily emulate it through the SDK tooling. Yeah, there's an emulator in there which, as the word says it, emulates the Windows Azure deployment mechanism. So that way you can have multiple roles running on your PC and have an idea on what the performance will be and how it will react to multi-roles. T-shirt sizes, I mean, by now you will already be aware what's in there, right? So just for your reading, You need to keep an eye on the time. Storage, that's a nice one. Storage is another thing that IT pros love. Backups, archiving, we need file storage, we need shares, we need stuff like that. Well, actually, Windows Azure is the cheapest SkyDrive there is available. Use it. I mean, you can have teras for zit, but little is squat. The money that you pay for storage and even the redundancy behind it is, it's unpayable in a perspective of owning it, but not in the perspective of really paying the bill. So, and with that, you can allocate your storage to either VMs as a VHD or to the worker roles and web roles. So that way you can share your data between all these roles easily. It's very fast. The storage is very, very fast. If you want to know more, a deep dive on storage, there's a good session online on MSDN by Yves Hoeleven. He does a level 666 session on storage and how it works. If you really want to know a deep dive in there, watch that session. Just Bing his name in channel 9. Yes, I use Bing for good understanding. Bing his name in channel 9 and you will find a great session on that. Do note, and this is important, as I said before, the VMs that you're deploying in cloud services are stateless, not persisting. So if you want to persist something, you add a drive to it. So if you want to install software to it, add a mount a VHD or a blob storage, so that way you can install your software from there. Windows storage, that's storage access. Again, you want as a user, as an IT pro, you want to limit the access to your storage. This can be done in several ways. You can have policies on your storage. You can have public visibility in your storage, as you know. It's always done with a storage key. So there's a lot of things you can do. Still some stuff missing, we know. But who knows, maybe that will change one day, right? The cool thing is that it can be, if you have storage, it's always in replication 3 times. So that's the cool thing. There's always a backup. Who needs NSA, right? Okay, how to access the storage? Well, there's tooling. And again, I point to my top 10 tools tip for the in my blog. One of them is the Nundesic, but my preferred one is the Celebrata tooling. I don't know, anybody uses Celebrata? MVPs, yes. Besides that, you? How do you like it?
Yeah, so far so good. It's only limitation for addressing tables.
For addressing tables?
Yeah.
And what's the limitation?
Do
a feature request. Hey, they respond greatly to feature requests. They try to put us in as much as possible. Again, I don't work for those guys. I just love it. If there's a good tooling in there, you should embrace it and you should support it. So that way we all get better of it. Because if nobody mentions it, nobody does anything with it. So just do a feature request. Open up and there's a in the main window, there's this user voice thing that you can react to. So that way, just do a feature request and it will respond to it.
Also, accessing the repository is a bit slow.
The repository is being
slow?
Very slow. All those tools are very slow. So when you are really putting anything to the blog or you are trying to update files, it's very slow. You can just go, take copy, drink copy, go for update, come back, and still it's copying.
Wow. Configuration, because for me it works very, very fast.
Okay.
So,
but what you can configure here, it's so easy. You've got a very limited interface, and also the features are limited, like in this Azure Storage Explorer. You cannot do a lot, you can just copy. You
should try right clicking and stuff on the tree and stuff. Because what people don't know for stable storage, importing high volumes of tables, just right click upload of CSV or something. It's just these little things. Sometimes you need to look into it deeply. And it's configuration and usage. Martin knows it too very well. If we can talk about it later and we can exchange ideas. So we're a couple of guys, so we all have our own experiences. So it's in slow. I don't know. I mean, inter storage, inter subscription storage copying, for instance, hyperly fast. Things like that. It works like a charm. So I.
Okay, so I don't know because you know, even when I'm doing that with the PowerShell script, it's also very slow. The files are not so big, like EF files, which are just copied between different subscriptions or different blobs, and it really takes a lot of time.
Okay, cool.
So you're not sure what this thing.
I'm going to keep up because I see that I'm almost running out of time. I still got 10 minutes. So if you guys want to have lunch, I'm not going to go in deeper into that. Just a small mention here. There's also a sort of on-prem device, which is called Store Simple, which allows you to have multi-tier storage. And Azure is the archiving layer. So if you're interested into that and want fast online on-prem access to files that are indexed for daily use or semi-daily use, and you want archiving, this is a feature that you should look into. And there's the good thing is that most of the time when you subscribe to an EA, there's still some things that you can do with it, because sometimes it still tend to give you one if you have a certain amount of EA. You know? Just giving it along. Another thing which is cool, I'm going to show you in just a second, is there's support for SQL Server now, which Azure as a backup mechanism. So you don't need to have expensive storage anymore in your own data center. You can use Azure storage immediately to back up to the cloud. Starting CU2 with SQL Server 2012 and 2014, which will be here somewhere next year, you can have that immediately. Anything before that, you don't have any support for it yet. So CU2 is the minimum level. Yeah. Plus, in SQL 14, you can immediately move your SQL Server to a VM workload in the cloud, which is a good thing too. Okay, cool. Talked about that. Windows Azure Backup. I'm just going to show you a small demo. Who used the Windows Azure Backup already? Cool. Not too many people, so I'm going to show you real quick. Where's my... I believe it's this one. No, it's not this one. It's this one that I need. Besides, did know that Windows Azure has sharks with freaking lasers, right? You didn't know that, right? Thanks to Martin Valio, who made my Windows Azure portal look more powerful. Right. Okay. I'm just going to go to a virtual machine that I have. But it's another one, another session that I need to do. It's on another... Sorry, I should have done this earlier. I can do it like that. I had it open in not. I do know the. It's that I wanted to do. Okay. All right. I'm just gonna, for my demo, I'm just gonna remote desktop into a server that I have, which I have configured for Windows Azure backup. So it's also there since. Okay. And what you can have is, and you can integrate this with System Center again, is it's an agent that you install and just go to the portal and you activate it. It's a designated piece of storage that you have. And you can easily, if you take a look here, you can easily have some backups that you can schedule on the machine, whether it's on-premise or off-premise. This is an example just... showing an off-premise server running in Windows Azure, so it's easily accessible. And I have this set up as a demo for my internal team, so that way they can play around with it to learn the storage layer a little bit better. So you can easily back up now. And as you can see, if I back up and I do a... Explore private. No way that should work fast enough. Now we're into the other portal. Come on, guys. As you can see, it's easily backing up. Got a few more minutes. Should have opened this up before. So if I now take a look at my vault, where is it? Recovery services, here we are. If I now take a look at my vault, you can see that a backup has been stored, protective items. You can see that today, 19th, I just created a backup. Easily in the cloud. I know this machine runs in the cloud, but you can easily do this with your on-prem. You can easily do this by managed things like disaster manager from System Center. So another advantage of using the cloud, because that's something that people tend to forget, that it's more than just running websites. Okay. I'm going to go quickly over the rest of it. Still got 5 minutes, so, or 3 minutes. No. Storage we had. Okay. Windows Azure Virtual Machines. Well, since we've already talked a lot about Windows Virtual Machines, I'm just going to state one more thing, is that don't forget, nowadays we're talking more and more about hybrid solutions, and VPNing is the way to do it. You used to have Azure Connect, but this is more manageable because you can have your own network layer and you can have your own VPN layer, which is actually a better way to do it. Own IP addresses, supports IPv4, routing, things like that. Do note that there's only a limited set of gateways that are supported and certified for now. The main story here is that developers and IT admins now can have virtual machines. You deploy to it, and in the past it really was a pain. Yeah. Whether it was a licensing cost, resource planning, because that's also something. Yeah. Now in Windows Azure, you just create your VMs, you let your developers do whatever they want to do or whatever they need to do. You manage the portability, and you manage the accessibility. You can have a more real life scenario and a more real life way of working with your environment as it should be in production, because you can immediately put it up to the same mirroring level. Use of gallery images, so you gain some time. Another cool thing is that you can still have portability, so if you want to, for some reason, want to take those things offline, you want to give the VM to your developer, you can easily take it with him. Since we have Windows 8, there's Hyper-V support in there, so you can easily run those things on your PC if you need it, right? If it's still needed. You never know if you're in an environment that has no internet. Could be possible. So I'm not going to go into the virtual machines because there's other people demonstrating the virtual machines, but just a demo of how to quickly set up the virtual machine environment. Cloud services, so I already talked about a little bit about cloud services, but how what you can do is how to manage them. As an IT pro, you need to deploy these things. There's several ways of doing that. You can have the packages, you can have by either doing it through Visual Studio or through System Center. Yeah? The packages is just through the portal, you upload them. And the cool thing here is most of the time for the IT pros is that you can have a staging in a production environment. So you can easily, when you have a cloud service, and I have one here running, again, oh, there it is. Up. Just your word, and it was more than enough. As you can see, I have a staging. I don't know if you can see it well. I have a staging environment running. I can easily just swap it here and do a kind of continuous delivery on that thing. Just to make sure you let your testers test the environment, and they're happy, they're satisfied, they give a go, and just immediately, with a click of the button, you just go swap. All right, you want to swap it? Yes, I want to swap it. Up, start swapping. Since it's multi-roles, it brings down one. Your service still stays available if there's a production environment. So through the way of the fabric controller manages your layers, it makes sure that the website never goes down until the last role is deployed. So that way, immediately people will see, I'm running this service, and all of a sudden they see changes. Yeah. So it's more of a continuous delivery system and more of a high availability system. Yeah. Okay. Almost there. Just a word on Come on. Why is my machine slowing as hell? And I'm not imitating a certain Redmondian. Right. So that way, by keeping all these mechanisms in mind, come on. These guys are hungry, come on. By keeping all these mechanisms in mind, we can actually go to a real-time experience, which is more to the things that we need and not any more of the things that we calculate. And that's the entire point this talk is about. As an IT pro, you get more freedom and less risks. Yeah. You get a little bit more an idea of what your cost will be, but most of the time the cost that you calculate, if you go into the pricing calculator, your cost will be lower than the cost that you see in the end of the month on the price calculator in Windows Azure, for instance. So what is required really matches more to the availability, yeah. Which is a good thing. Last point, and then we're really off. Identity management. Is anybody talking about identity tomorrow? I think in Sam's session there's federation, right?
If I can make it work.
Okay, sorry. Okay, you didn't hear that. The cool thing with Windows Azure is it has its own private little thing called Windows Azure Active Directory, which you can integrate, but you also still have ACS. You also have still the ADFS integration with on-premise. You can have third-party identity providers. I've listed them for you. One that's really interesting to take a look on, and it's not because he's my friend, but if it's a good service, I'm willing to plug it, is socialsts.net. It allows you to have all these and more as a identity provider, and it's really a neat service to take a look at. You can try it for free, right?
It is free.
It is free, even better. And yeah, there's no such thing as a free lunch, but in this case, the free lunch is almost there. The only thing that it doesn't have in real life is this thing, sharks with freaking lasers. No. Although the portal has, if you're lucky enough. Another small thing is gathering data. We talked about managing. There's a free service called System Center Advisor. If you're managing VMs and you don't have System Center in place, you still want to monitor your availability or the way your services are acting out. System Center Advisor is free. You just install a server and a gateway and an agent, and you get the data from there. I can still have one more minute to show it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then I'm done. I promise. Where is it? It's so low. So actually what you see, if the screen goes, yeah. This is a System Center Advisor, and what it does, it installs agents, and you get reports back with all these nifty alerts that you can set, and all this nifty, don't go into the, come on. Yeah, it's Silverlight, sorry. I know it's slow, but something still turned. Come on. Okay. You can have all these events that are triggered, and you get a good overview of what's running on your server. So if you want to manage multiple servers, but you don't want to pay for a service, System Center Advisor is a good monitoring tool, free monitoring tool. So just give it along. It works together well with the System Center on-prem with the entire environment, and you can have the pulling of all the events and the alerts. You can send them over to your System Center environment, so that way with Operations Manager you can set it off. That being said, then I have only one more thing to say to you guys, and if I can find my slides, So, what does an IT pro need to do tomorrow? We don't do install hardware anymore. No more broken backs. Configuration of the network will be a little bit different. Install the OS, you don't need to, just grab the image. And all the rest, just the layers on top that you know. So is your job at risk? No. You're going to love developers? Yes, because you're going to give them some access, okay? So these guys will love you more. New ways of supporting your enterprise, new ways of supporting your business, more agile. They will be more happy because you're faster on the reaction time. So that's a good thing. And that being said, I just say thank you, have a nice lunch, thank you for sitting this out. Thank you. Have a nice afternoon.